really happened, but it wasn't by some grand decree. It's like trying to explain why nobody saw it once everyone started to see that the world was much smaller than ever before. And over there wasn't so far anymore. What we did unto others washed up on our shore. The answer was hard to ignore. The end of war. The end of war.
Good evening and welcome to Peace Talk, a production by the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace for KTOO's radio's focus on community. This is VFP's contribution to our community's ongoing conversation about war and peace and the important issues and questions they raise in our society and around the world. I'm Rich Moniak, your host for tonight's program. We'll be talking about the decades-long occupation of Palestine, and in particular, Gaza, that small strip of land that's geographically apart from the West Bank and even more removed from the conscience of the world. I've got three guests to introduce, but first let me acknowledge the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. This is the one day a year that Americans set aside a day to recognize King's contributions to justice and the cause of peace. There are several events scheduled around town today. A few hours ago, in his honor, about 75 people, myself included and one of our guests that's here, participated in lighting up the peace symbol cut into the brush on the hillside above Costco and Home Depot. It turns out the people who cut that brush initially actually heard the ads on K2 and went out and had candles lit before we even got there tonight. They said they were big supporters of Veterans for Peace. And I want to thank Mark Miller for organizing that. If you weren't there, check KTOO tomorrow and the Juneau Empire. Hopefully there'll be photos of the event in both places. Now, there's very little documented about King's position regarding the conflict between Israel and Palestine. But that doesn't stop some from claiming, quote, the authenticity of his support for Israel, as Gilroy did in an opinion piece written for the web publication Open Zion just today. It's a site that says they believe in respectful argument with those who disagree. So tonight I'm going to do just that and say that I believe even if King did support the policies of the Israeli government toward the Palestinian people almost 50 years ago, that the conflict as we know it today is very different. The occupation that began following the Six-Day War of 1967 was in its relative infancy. I have no doubt that if he were alive today, he'd condemn it just as harshly as he condemned our government's war in Vietnam. And I think my guests tonight will agree. So first let me introduce the two guests with me here in the studio. Haitham is a 16-year-old student from Gaza.
Hello.
He is attending high school this year in Haines. His ambitions are to go to medical school to become a doctor or a dentist. Mm-hmm. Last month, he won a National Education Award for a public talk he gave in Haines, and he gave his school there an origami peacock made from 2,000 pieces of paper. The peacock is the peace symbol in Palestine. Haitham is in town this week to participate in a UAS forum with two other Muslim students from the Middle East, and that's at 6 p.m. on Wednesday evening at the UAS Rec Center. Next, we have Larry Herlock. Larry is a longtime resident of Juneau, has been a member of the Juneau People in Peace and for Peace and Justice since its inception in 2002. He has sponsored trips and been host to various Palestinian speakers in Juneau. The first he sponsored here is tonight's guest, Ramzi Baroud, who is joining us by telephone from Washington State. In fact, Larry quite remarkably arranged this just yesterday. Ramzi is a Palestinian-American journalist who was born and raised in a refugee camp in the Gaza Strip and now lives near Seattle. He is the author of several books, including My Father Was a Freedom Fighter, Gaza's Untold Story. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of the Palestine Chronicle, an independent newspaper that's largely focused on Palestine, Israel, and the Middle East region. His writings have been published by the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, the Washington Post, and the Christian Science Monitor. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Are you there, Ramzi?
I am there, yes.
Oh, great. So let's begin with you. Today, your Chronicle published a tribute to Dr. King that was written by Kathy Kelly. How do you think Dr. King would look at Israel's occupation of Palestine today?
Well, of course, if we, in order for us to discuss the Martin Luther King's relevance to the conflict in Palestine and Israel, we have to look at the legacy. What did he leave us with? What quotes, what statements, what struggles did he espouse here in America that is relevant to the justice, the fight for justice in Palestine? And if we look at it completely independent from what the Israelis are trying to do in order to taint the legacy of Martin Luther King to fit their colonial policies in Palestine, we will find that Martin Luther King, if he was alive today, he would stand in complete solidarity and support for the Palestinian people who have been occupied for, you know, in over the course of 65 years. They suffer from a continuous state of ethnic cleansing that is going on in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, a state of siege, draconian siege that is happening in Gaza right now, where thousands of people have perished just in the last few years, specifically since 2008 until today. Of course, someone of the legacy and of the greatness of Martin Luther King, we know exactly where he would stand as far as this conflict is concerned, the same way that numerous noble men and women all over the world, in America and elsewhere, also continue to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
So, Larry, you remember Martin Luther King's Riverside speech, perhaps. I mean, you were younger than you are today. How do you feel that that would fit in with what Ramsey said and your understanding of the situation in Palestine?
Well, Martin Luther King stood up for people who were basically under siege, even though, you know, they were citizens of the United States and with some rights. And, of course, even in Israel itself, you can be a Palestinian, but with, I believe, Ramsey would say, limited rights. So I would understand him to stand with the Palestinian people.
Okay, and Haitham, now this Martin Luther King obviously is way before your time. You're studying in the United States. Did you study much about King during the past week as his holiday approached?
Well, actually, I didn't study exactly what he did, but I have a brief idea about what was his role in America. He was like against the violence and against and with the human rights and like these things, the important things of the human rights, and against the occupation and especially like in the Gaza or Palestinian situation. You can see like now the occupation and the settlements. So this, the major idea of his opinion was like against the government and with the human rights.
Yeah, that's right. And from jail in Birmingham, he famously wrote a letter in which he said, an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. And I think that's the case of what we're talking about in Gaza. And it's America's injustice as much as it is Israel inflicted injustice on the Palestinian people. Ramsey, you grew up in a refugee camp. Can you describe what that was like?
Well, when we say a refugee camp, the impression that many people have when they think of a refugee camp is a place where people basically run away to safety and they live under sometimes horrendous conditions until they are repatriated, they are taken back to their homes at one point in the future. Palestinian refugees, of course, remain the longest standing refugees issue in the world. We have been waiting for 6.5 decades to go back, and we are yet to go back, and large bulk of Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza live in refugee camps. Those who are living in Gaza haven't really lived the refugee's experience, meaning that you are in a safe haven waiting to go back, even though the situation is difficult, still enjoying a level of safety. we never really did that. It was really more like a concentration camp, if you will, in the sense that the refugee camp itself fell under the occupation, the military occupation of Israel in 1967. I was born in 1972. That's 5 years after the Israeli occupation. So all I remember, of course, is being born in a refugee camp where Israeli soldiers are based all around the camp. It was a constant state of siege. That state of siege continues until today, of course. So forget about the poverty. Forget about the lack of everything. There's also the lack of freedom, the lack of the freedom of movement, the lack of access to anything and everything, the lack of political expression, being constantly watched and chased and arrested and beaten and killed and so forth and so on. My house was located near the martyrs' graveyard. This is a graveyard just for people who were killed during successive Israeli attacks on Gaza, and that it was the largest graveyard and was constantly growing. And most of the inhabitants of that graveyard, of course, were young men from my refugee camp and so forth. So it's not exactly your everyday refugee experience that you would, you know, think of when you think of a state of war happening, like as in refugees living in Jordan or in Lebanon. We are looking at a siege within siege, a refugee camp under occupation, under the constant violent behavior and watch of Israeli soldiers. And even though Israel left Gaza or deployed out of Gaza in 2005, they maintained the state of siege on Gaza. In fact, the state of siege in Gaza now is much worse than it used to be during my time living in the Gaza Strip. So we are talking about this episode continuing until this very day.
Well, I want to say something, Mr. Ramsey. I think we will go back, and I hope, and we will still have the hope that we're going to go back, and we will have our land back, and we will have justice and freedom.
And that's,
of course. Yes.
That has to be everybody's hope. And what is it like? I mean, you listen to Ramsey talk about his youth and the problems, and Gaza's population has exploded since that time. When did you leave, Ramsey?
I left in 1994.
Okay, so in the past 20 years, Gaza's population has grown by 500,000 at least?
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? What is it like for you living there now? I mean, Gaza is still, as Ramsey said, somewhat under siege, or the borders are not closed. You don't have freedom of movement. What was it like for you to come to America to study in this program?
Like being here in America, it's like I didn't even dreamed about it. It just was like a miracle. I go out from the siege. So it was like different experience. Was like now it's a big experience and different experience, like being in siege and being have lack of freedom, and now here with all freedom and have your all choices and do whatever you want to, and it's something special for me. It's amazing experience for me. It's just, yeah.
Did you have trouble getting papers to, and I know you've experienced trouble with getting papers to travel in and out of Canada while you're here.
Yeah, I applied for the Canada visa for Canada, but I didn't. They didn't do it, or I didn't do it. I didn't. They didn't agree on the paper that I sent, and I didn't get the visa. The main reason was the main of or the purpose of visit. They didn't agree on that. I just want to go to American camp, do freestyle, go wild, being wild. But, yeah, they refused to have a visa for Canada.
Did you have any difficulty getting from Gaza to Egypt to travel to United States?
Oh, yeah. First of all, when I was in Gaza and we were planning to travel, when we went to Rafah cross border, we have some trouble at the beginning. Some troops like prevent us to go out from Gaza Strip. Then after a while, it came easier and we went outside, and also the Israel's checkpoints, when they start like checking your body and checking your clothes and everything and your baggages and bags. It was hard time, like, you're not like, you hope to go out, but you're not sure. Even like, you're in, like, you are in your country and you are in occupation, under occupation, and you hope that you're gonna make it to go out to see the your country from other side, from other country. It was like a hard time for me going out.
So Ramsey, I know one of the things Larry's spoken to me about with these exchange students we bring to Juneau is that up here they miss experiencing what it's like to be a Palestinian American. There's a fairly sizable community, I understand, in Seattle, a very active community. How would you describe that to Haitham in terms of what extra work you do to educate Americans about the plight of your people back home?
Right. The experience that Haitham is speaking about is something that I can very much relate to. You know, this kind of initial experience of coming here and realizing that you actually treated with a level of respect that you are not used to by, you know, men in uniform, or you are able to move about. You know, I know he wasn't as lucky in terms of getting through to Canada, but in general, it is something that we are not accustomed to, and it's a bit, there is a bit of a cultural shock that happens as a result of this, because we are born in an environment in which we are, you know, subjugated and expected, you know, to be treated poorly and lack any kind of freedom, any meaningful kind of freedom, really, outside within Gaza itself. But then we come here, and then the situation is somewhat different. But what happens in the next stage after that is that also there is, I don't want to refer to it as guilt per se, but we do really become kind of harbor a greater sense of responsibility, because we are enjoying certain privileges that otherwise we would have not enjoyed, and our brethren back in Gaza and in Palestine lack that sort of access. So what we end up doing, naturally, you kind of find your position, your place in this, you know, battlefield, if you will, in which we become, you know, we reach out, we speak out, we educate. We try to really inform the community, any community, anywhere, in any place we are in, to become aware of what is happening to our people back home, and to help them relate to it through their own personal experiences. This is why it's very relevant, you know, talking about Martin Luther King in this particular context, because it's very much part of the battle. Americans were fighting their own battles for justice, and Palestinians were doing the exact same thing at the exact same time, except in our case, the dream of Martin Luther King is yet to be realized, and we are still fighting for it. So yes, we do live normal lives, and we get good education, and we fight as hard as we can to make it like everyone else in this country. But at the same time, there is this added responsibility where we organize as community in order for us to reach out and to educate and to enlighten people and to remind them of their moral responsibility toward the Palestinian people, especially because Americans, the tax money of American tax money is in fact going to support Israel, is arming the Israeli, the IDF, the American Congress and Senate are backing Netanyahu, perhaps more than Obama himself is backing Netanyahu. So it becomes an added level of moral responsibility that Americans have got to do something about this, and they have got to sever this unholy alliance they have with Israel, in which the Palestinians are paying a price.
Well, yes, and as you say, you know, speaking out in terms of Dr. King's, you know, in the legacy that he left, you know, his famous Riverside Speech again, he, I think the title was, you know, something to do with breaking the silence.
I'd like to address the issue. Some years back, I wrote a piece for Ramsey's paper called Control the Language, You Control the Argument. I'd like Ramsey to speak about the difficulties of the subject which he's spent his adult life on, which is trying to educate the people, especially here in America, about the situation in Palestine. I want to give a typical example of the kind of thing that happens is here in the last week, the local paper, The Empire, showed had an article about settlers attacking Palestinians. But the picture that accompanied the article was several Palestinians trying to protect some settlers from being physically assaulted by hand by other Palestinians. In other words, the violence being shown in the picture was, you know, Palestinian on Israeli, even though the article was quite the opposite. And I've noticed that, can I say that when I read about Palestine, I often feel that the language is really skewed. The adjectives used on the for the Palestinian side versus the Israeli side let you know that the people writing the article or editing the article, as it will be, portray the Israelis as being our friends, whether they do right or wrong.
In fact, this is very much true. And you know, before I comment on that, if I'm allowed, just a quick elaboration here to kind of claim a level of responsibility as Palestinians. And supporters of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian struggle, we, I think, kind of really failed to grasp this very point early on. While the Israelis and their supporters did really achieve, I would say, a level of mastery, how they managed to manipulate language, manipulate stories, manipulate reality in such a way that they have presented something to Americans, to the average American, that is almost entirely different from what is happening on the ground, to the point that you meet people who tell you, I was thinking this is what's actually going on, but when I went there, I realized it was something entirely different. This is the art of the Hasbara, the propaganda that they have done, and they have done so well, while on the other hand, we did not. And I think we are getting much better at it, and maybe much better since that article was published in the Palestine Chronicle. I do remember it very clearly because it really was important that we start perhaps not getting involved in the art of manipulation, but becoming aware of the power of the written word and how do you create frames of references, historical, political, social, cultural, etc., etc., all sorts of frames of references that would allow the American who has this idea that Palestinians are inherently violent, Palestinians are bent on the destruction of the State of Israel, Palestinians hate us, you don't really know why, but they just hate us, and you know, to allow them to change that perspective and to truly position the story in the proper context. And one of the important things about doing so, and that's something that I try to invest my time and effort in recent years, is to humanize the Palestinian, because it's really difficult to break the many, many walls that have been erected by Israeli propaganda for many years. So the best thing to do is to humanize the Palestinian. When you have a student like Haytham, for example, being a host on your station and being there and talking to people, the mindset changes. Haytham does not have to have the kind of articulation that is going to be, that is going to change or to challenge the Israeli narrative for the last 60 years or so. But if he is able to present himself the way that, you know, that allows the average American to relate to a Palestinian as an individual with a face, with a name, with a sense of humor, you see what I mean? These little things eventually will captivate the imagination of people. Imagine doing this at a mega level, as opposed to at an individual level. I think we are doing so. Perhaps our successes in Europe are much better than our successes in the U.S. so far. I just came from a very long tour in French-speaking countries in Europe, and we can see the change happening at a much faster rate than we anticipated, and we really do hope to duplicate this experience here in America.
Ramsey, I would say that the Juno People and Peace and Justice have sponsored 10 students under the program that Haitham is part of, and all from the Middle East. And I feel that the program's the most worthwhile program that the Juno People in Peace and Justice have ever had. And I think the mere presence of these students in the school system here in Juneau, Alaska, just doing the normal things, going to class, studying, being friends, and so forth, does more than anything else I've ever seen to make the people, at least of this community, aware that Palestinians are real people with real lives and quite like ourselves.
What I think about, I want to like comment on what Ramsey said, Mr. Ramsey said. I think media has it's the biggest role in this situation. What I think we really have lack of, we really have lack of the media. Media, like as you can see, we don't have media. The other side, which is the Israel, what I consider, they have a media, and they know really how they affect people. What I so I think media has biggest effect on people and how they interact people, without telling the true story about it.
Absolutely, Haitham. I fully agree with you, and I don't know if you are aware of this new film, Palestinian movie that is nominated for another Oscar just in the last few days. The kind of things that we haven't really seen in the past, to see Palestinian movies in American and international theaters competing for recognition, and stories that are indeed telling more or less the collective pain and the collective anguish of the Palestinian people. So we do see change, and change is happening, perhaps not as at the fast pace that we would like to see, perhaps not as fast as Israeli bulldozer destroying Palestinian olive groves and building walls in the West Bank. And this is where why we are very frustrated, because we feel that Israel is implementing all these lasting changes, changing the very landscape and the very Palestinian identity. But on the other hand, thinking outside that drama, we realize that we are actually are in fact reaching out, and in fact we are making a difference. Hopefully we can, with the help of our friends and allies and people who care, not just about Palestinians, but you know, the very legacy of people like Martin Luther King, the very legacy of the civil rights movement, the very legacy of the struggle that is happening right now in American communities everywhere for equality, for economic opportunity, for rights, and so forth, to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, because at the end of the day, their fight and our fight is one and the same. There's absolutely no difference.
Yeah, and the voices of dissent are absolutely essential to keep this fight going, and your voice is one, Ramsey. Haitham is a young man who should expect to carry on that voice when he goes back to Palestine by keeping in contact with his friends here in America. You know, and the friends he makes here hopefully will travel to other parts of the country and say, I knew a Palestinian once, and that media image isn't true.
Yeah, correct. Like, here being in America, that means you are presenting your country. When you present your country in a bad way, that means, for example, like, if my friend had a bad image of me, that means he had a bad image of all Palestinians. But if he had a good image, that means he has a good image of my country and a good image of the all Palestinian, and he will like start looking around and see what and figure out what's around and how Israel's occupation and the occupying Gaza and Palestine. So like with the if he has like a bad knowledge or a bad image of me, he's not gonna care about me. But if he had a good image, he's gonna care and start searching up about the issue and Palestinian case.
Well, this is a good point to take a break in the program. We've got some music that Haitham requested, and I'd like him to explain what it is. And then we'll be back after that. I want to remind you that you listen to KTOO in Juneau, and this is Peace Talk.
This is going to be, its name is Al Kufiya. This song is maybe the famous song in Gaza Strip or in Palestine. It's really powerful for every Palestinian. And I think it really means a lot for me, and it's really powerful.
And it's in Arabic. I apologize to the listeners who won't understand it, but feel the mood that it conveys to Haitham. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Welcome back to Peace Talk. This is Rich Moniak, and I'm in the studio tonight with Larry Herlock from Juno. And we're also on the phone with Ramzi Baroud, a Palestinian-American writer who lives in Washington State, and Haitham, a 16-year-old exchange student from Gaza studying in Haines. And Haitham, I know you've got some questions you want to ask Ramzi, but before we begin, first tell us, remind me again what the name of that song was.
Its name, Ali Al-Kufiya. Ali Al-Kufiya. Kufiya is like the scarf that, it's like black and white. And Ali means like raised up.
I've got some of those at home. I think I showed you those when you visited last time. But let's, before you get to talk to Ramzi and ask him some questions, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience in Haines, what it's like to come from a hot, arid land in the Middle East to frigid, cold Alaska.
Like at the beginning, as being like, I haven't seen snow before. It was like first time I see snow. It was like boom, like something big for me, something different. It was like, it's like a fluffy snow, it's cold though. It's cold. But like it's different. Like in Gaza, after the weather are hot, after the bombing, after that I saw some, like beside our house there was like a building, now it's gone. Like it was five rockets, it was bombed by five rockets. I was sleeping at night in 2010, yeah, I think so. 2010, it was like bombed, and like I was sleeping and everything. I woke up on the fifth one, yeah. It was like horrible, yeah. Everything was destroyed. Yeah. And after all of that, and here in Haines, you have your freedom, you have a lot of land, you have population. It's completely different. But I like Gaza. I like it. Even bombs, even lack of freedom, even lack of, I like it. It's kind of your dignity. It's identity also. It's your identity.
What do you hope to bring home with you from studying here?
Being here, I'm presenting my country. I'm like an ambassador. And this is not an easy job or an easy thing to do. Like presenting your country. Just like all of your country presenting it, it's not that easy. So yeah.
So you speak to students, and I know you did a talk we talked about to the community in Haines. You'll be doing one here this week, and you do. That's the ambassador role. You're trying to educate them.
Yeah,
students and the public in general about your country.
Yeah, I did a presentation about my country in Haines. And many people came. It was 65 people, and it was good presentation. Many people many people like now they know about Palestine and they start searching about it, and they really now know about our situation, about our case. So, like being from home and coming outside, presenting your country, it's really different, and it's really also it's amazing experience and opportunity for me, especially like being trapped and under siege and coming here. Yeah.
So what particular would you like to ask Ramzi about? Ramzi, you should know that before I spoke with Larry last night, I met with Haitham in Haines in December, and he was he knew Larry knew you, and he was very, very, very interested in making some sort of arrangements to meet you. So you've got a fan from Gaza in Haines, Alaska right now.
How wonderful. Thank you.
I was really interested in meeting you, and I hope I will meet you someday, and maybe in Seattle or somewhere. And I hope I will.
As we say in Arabic, inshallah, we will. If it's not in Seattle, somewhere else. I really liked what you had to say, Haitham, where you described, the new things that you found in Alaska and in the U.S. And at the end, you said, "But I like Gaza. It's my dignity and it's my identity." It's very beautiful, and it's really that's the spirit of the Palestinian people everywhere. Everywhere I go, you just see the same sentiment. Even, Haitham, even people who've never been born or never visited Palestine or Gaza, they still feel that very strong connection and that sense of identity. And I think in some ways that's what makes us stronger, the stronger party in this. We might not have the money, we might not have the weapons, we might not have, the what they do, but we have this mental prowess, this determination, this collective will, the memory, the identity, that makes it impossible for them to, finish this conflict at our expense, because we refuse to let go. And it's people like you, the new generation, that is going to lead us to yet another stage in the struggle until, inshallah, one day we achieve our freedom.
Inshallah. We will. As we connected and as we, there is no division between us, and as we have, as a part, and like one hand and one body, we will achieve it and we will get it, and we will get it, inshallah.
Well, and that's also, again, speaking in Dr. King's spirit, the longevity, the commitment, the dedication of the people, of a collective body that brings about change, people that don't give up, people that stand by who they are with that dignity. I'm glad to hear that as well from both of you. And go ahead, Haitham.
I want to ask Mr. Ramsey a question.
Please go ahead.
What do you think is going to happen in the future? Is it going to be... Are we going to have like one country? Are we going to have two countries? What's your perspective?
It's a question that I'm contending with myself, and I'm constantly thinking and talking and writing about. And, it seems to me that at the end of the day, all these lines that have been drawn over the historic map of Palestine, at the end of the day, these are not real. These are imaginary lines. This is a place for Jews. This is for Arabs. This road is for Jews. This is for Arabs. This settlement is Jewish only, this village, and so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, we are still there. We are still all living and sharing that very space. As far as the Palestinians are concerned, we are divided by, 400, 500, 600 checkpoints, over 100 settlements, hundreds of bypass, Jewish-only bypass roads that are prohibited for Arabs to use. But still, we are all existing in that space, and there are millions of us, and there are millions of them. We are sharing the water, we are sharing the air, we are... there are, no matter what they do, no matter what they try to do to push us out, we are there, we are multiplying, we are growing, and we are steadfast. So the idea is not like I have a magical solution, nor does anyone else have it, but really the more one matures in his ideas, the more he thinks about this. I mean, aren't we already living in one state? It's just except it's a one state in which the Arabs have little rights, and Jews have all the rights. It's one state in which we are living surrounded by checkpoints and settlements and soldiers, and they are not. In which we have no freedom, and they have freedom. In which they have all the rights, and we have none. So wouldn't it make much more sense for these racist laws to be dropped, and for the checkpoints to be dismantled, and for the settlements to be removed, and for the people just to remain where they are, and to be respected, and to be treated with dignity, and to be given equal rights, so we can continue to share that very space that we have actually coexisted and shared for all of these years. So it's really not a utopian or a fantasy. It's very much the reality. And we are talking about Martin Luther King after all, right? you know, Martin Luther King was asking for the equality of his people in this very space, in this very land. He was not asking for his people to be taken anywhere else, to be kicked out of the country, to be living behind barbed wires or behind high walls. He was asking for his people to remain who they are, where they are, and to be living as equal citizens in this very country. The very struggle in India, the very struggle of Nelson Mandela in South Africa, and it is and really should be, ultimately, the struggle for the Palestinian people.
Ramsey Leary here. Good to talk to you again, old friend. I know that you have your own publication, PalestineChronicle.com, but I also know that your articles often appear in the Asia Times, atimes.com. Can you give us some other sources that not only yourself, but other places that people might be reading on the Internet so they can get an idea of, quote, your side of the story?
Absolutely. One of the best websites we have out there is the electronicintifada.net. electronicintifada.net. It's a very, very important source of news about Palestine. But we also have numerous other resources, for example, the BDS movement, bdsmovement.org or .com. That gives a lot of the progress of the work we do in order for us to channel the energies of civil society to boycott Israeli military institutions, the Israeli government, and so forth. So bdsmovement.org is an excellent website. electronicintifada.net is an important website. Of course, palestinechronicle.com. Once you go to these websites and spend a bit of time, you will develop or you'll be exposed to even more resources and so forth. This is a good start, I think.
So Ramsey, this is Rich. I've got a question for you about the resumption of the so-called peace talks with Secretary of State Kerry leading the way that were initiated this past summer. What do you see for hope or meaning coming out of that?
There's really very little. Not because there's very little hope. There's abundance of hope. But hope will not come through, you know, regenerating the very old peace process that bore no fruits for 20 years. To the contrary, the plight of the Palestinians is much worse. We've lost more land. We've lost the number of illegal Jewish settlers in the occupied territories, doubled if not tripled since Oslo was signed in 1993. So if we continue a legacy of a failed project, we should not expect any other results but more failure. In fact, this is what Einstein has said, that this is the very definition of madness, to expect different results by doing the exact same thing over and over and over again. But why are they doing it? This is really a more important question. If we all know it's going to fail, if Mahmoud Abbas himself, the head of the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, said it repeatedly, this is going to fail, why is everyone being part of this charade? I think for the Israelis, they just want to win time. The bulldozers never stopped for a second digging into Palestinian land. The settlements never stopped growing. The Israelis are changing absolutely nothing and making no commitments at all. They continue to talk peace and to blame Palestinians for everything. The Palestinians, they need the money. The Palestinian Authority basically is this bank account that is allowing a whole lot of money to be channeled through so-called donors countries, and they want to sustain the apparatus and their status and their prestige, of course, at the expense of the Palestinian people. The Americans want this to continue because they are growing less and less relevant in the Middle East. I was there for about 6-7 months before I returned back during Christmas back to Seattle, and I am just what I witnessed this time was absolutely shocking. To see how irrelevant the U.S. foreign policy has become and has grown in the Middle East. We are no longer that major player, the mover and shaker of Middle East politics anymore. We are growing less and less relevant to the extent that France is now becoming, to an extent, a more effective and player in the Middle East. So John Kerry wants to restore some of American relevance to the Middle East, and of course, the only door that is available to him and it's open to him is the peace process. So it's really not a peace process for the sake of peace, it's a peace process for the sake of the process itself. The process is benefiting all of these three parties, and that is going to go nowhere. But there is another important thing here. I think they also realize, the Americans, the Europeans in particular, they realize that Netanyahu is leading everyone towards the cliff. The whole two-state solution thing is absolute nonsense. It's a joke. The West Bank landscape has been fundamentally and irreversibly altered. And they understand that without two-state solutions, the only thing we can talk about is one state. And nobody wants to talk about one state. They are politically not prepared for that new reality. So perhaps they are trying to explore possibilities of saving that option that was introduced in the late 70s by Henry Kissinger and still exists until today. However, there is no practical evidence whatsoever that a two-state solution is workable. So the Europeans and the Americans are trying to convince Netanyahu, please, Bibi Netanyahu, try to understand that you are pushing everyone here towards a scenario that's going to be deadly for everyone. But would it bring peace? Of course not. How can it bring peace if John Kerry is involved right now in a proposal that is going to give the Jordan Valley, that's the eastern border of the prospective Palestinian state, give it to Israel to be militarily controlled by Israel for decades and decades? How is that even a possibility? Now they are actually talking about land swaps, meaning ethnic cleansing of Palestinians living in today's Israel, to push them to the West Bank in exchange for land that Israel would want to keep. They are trying to create this impossible arrangement to maintain the two-state solution and to give Israel exactly what it wants. We know from history that Palestinians will never accept that, and no Palestinian leader in his right mind would compromise on his people's rights to this extent. This is what Yasser Arafat failed to do as far as Israel and the U.S. is concerned, and I know for a fact that even if Abbas had what it takes to play along, the Palestinians at one point will stop him.
Also, I want to add something that what Americans don't know. Most of the taxes that Americans pay for the government, it goes to the Israelis. And it goes to the army of Israelis, which are bombing Gaza and bombing and killing people and destroying nation and destroying holy places and occupying Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, which is like the most famous holy place in Palestine for Muslims. And so, like, these taxes that from Americans going to Israel, so I hope that someday it's going to be prevented to go to Israel and stop doing that and stop killing people, and I hope so.
Well, we're running close to the end of the show here. I think I'd like to ask Ramsey one more question. So what kind of advice would you have for Haitham, both in finishing his next few months here in America and then returning to Gaza?
You know, it's difficult to give Haitham an advice being as smart and enlightened and you know as he is. But I would say, if I would wanted someone to give me an advice at that age, at that point in my life, I would say stay open-minded, keep all the possibilities in mind, really hold on any educational opportunity that comes to your mind. At the end of the day, education is your asset, not just financial asset, not about jobs and careers, but really an opportunity to see the world as it is, not the world as we imagined it to be. Education is so essential and so important. Make friendships and keep them. hold these friendships, because, you know, like Larry and I have known each other for many years, and I consider him like a brother. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is very, very important. So, and you know what? Keep on doing this. Continue the struggle and the resistance, and have fun. Enjoy life as well.
Yeah, that I will try to make. And also, I'm making that, and I hope I will be
successful.
You
will be successful.
Yeah, I'm going to
be successful. We all hope you'll be successful
in life, and
you know. And it reminds me, you know, one of the points Larry makes with the students we bring here is that we have to make sure we set aside time for them to enjoy living, that they're not all here to work.
Yeah.
They're not all here to work for their cause, for their country, for their ambassador role. We hope to you get to do some skiing this weekend, Haitham, while
yeah.
you're here.
Fun.
You know, the winter can be a wonderful place to play. So I think we could talk a lot longer, Ramsey. I've got several questions I never did get a chance to ask you. But I think it's about time to start wrapping up the show for tonight. I want to thank you tremendously for taking the time out with very short notice to participate with us tonight. I hope listeners enjoyed your viewpoints, your insights, and your understanding of a part of the world that most of us don't spend a lot of time hearing about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich, and all the best, Haitham, and all that you do. And it was very nice talking to you again, Larry.
Thanks. I hope we meet.
Nice to talk to you, Ramsey.
All right.
Okay, and I want to also thank Larry for the arrangements he made to get Ramsey on the program. Like Larry said, he wrote for Ramsey's Palestine Chronicle in the past. He has, I think you brought him to Juno once in the past. He's got a couple of remarkable books that are worth looking up if you're interested in the story of the Middle East told from someone who grew up there, someone whose parents stayed there after he came to America. And, of course, I want to thank Haitham for coming in.
Thank you.
He is here.
My pleasure.
If you want to hear him speak again in a different context with other Muslim students who are part of the Youth and Exchange Study Program, he will be speaking at the at UAS Wednesday night at 6 p.m. at the UAS Rec Center. They'll have refreshments starting at 5:30. The program's titled Translocal Muslim Identities Around the World. It's part of a honors program that Robin Walls is working at the university. Another announcement I'd like to make is that K.J. Metcalf is inviting anyone interested in helping establish a new direction for the United Methodist Camp. The camp is now an independent nonprofit seeking to build Juno's sense of community through spiritual renewal, cultivating nonviolence, fostering social justice and leadership skills, cultural diversity, and environmental stewardship. KJ is looking for volunteers on this new start for the camp, and they are meeting at COPAS at 6 p.m., Thursday, February 6th. Again, that's for the establishing a new direction for the United Methodist Camp. You've been listening to KTOO in Juneau. This is Peace Talk. We're a monthly program that's sponsored by the Veterans for Peace and part of KTOO's focus on community. And with that, it's about time to say goodnight. Thank you for joining us, and see you next month.